Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Functional Safety for PLCs and I.O. Controllers. I'm your moderator, Brandon Lewis, here with today's speakers, Christian Herget of Texas Instruments, and Christian Dermeyer of TUV SuedRail Munich. I'd like to start by more formally introducing our speakers, starting with Christian Herget, who is a Systems and Applications Engineer at Texas Instruments in the EMEA Sales and Applications Organization. Mr. Herget focuses on applications with functional safety requirements and has 7 years of experience working with microcontrollers for safety applications and 5 years working with safety-critical applications in the industrial sector. Christian earned his electrical engineering degree in information technology from Rhein-Main University of Applied Sciences in 2009. Our other presenter today is Christian Dermeyer, senior expert and functional safety trainer at TUV SuedRail Munich. With more than 12 years of experience in functional safety projects related to the process industry and machinery and safety system evaluation, Mr. Dermeyer is a technical certifier for functional safety and industrial IT security, a member of the IECEE Working Group 9 for Functional Safety, and has provided trainings for IEC 61508, IEC 61511, and ISO 13849 since 2011. Now let's address a few housekeeping items before we begin, starting with the features of the audience viewing console. The Enlarge Slides button will maximize the presentation slides to fill your entire screen. Second, the Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you prefer to follow along with a hard copy. The Forward to a Friend button enables you to send an email that includes a registration link to this eCast so that friends and colleagues can also attend. And most importantly, the Ask a Question text box allows you to participate in the event by simply typing a question into the box and hitting the Submit Question button below. You can submit questions at any time during the course of the presentation, and we encourage you to do so early and often. We'll address as many of these questions as possible during the closing Q&A period, and if you have questions about the eCast operation itself, feel free to submit those, and one of our technicians will be happy to assist you. A final note before we begin is that all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded without prior permission. So at this point, we can get started, and I'd like to hand it off to Christian Dermeyer of TUV SuedRail Munich. Mr. Dermeyer, welcome.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you very much for this great introduction by you. So I'm Christian Dermeyer, and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. So I'm Christian Dürmer from the TÜV Süd. TÜV Süd is a company which was founded 150 years ago here in Germany, and it was founded by the industry, in particular of operators of steam boilers as well as of manufacturers of steam boilers, because 150 years ago, this was the time where steam boilers very often exploded, and the industry decided that they have to prevent from this, that they have to take over measures against this, and then they founded the TÜV here in Germany. Now, TÜV Süd started with testing and inspecting of steam boilers, and later on TÜV Süd also grew up together with the industry, with the development of the industry. And nowadays TÜV is a global working company with more than 20,000 experts with subsidiaries in U.S., in South America, as well as in China. We are providing still the same services as we started, so meaning we are doing testing and inspecting of technical equipment, we are certifying technical equipment, and also our concern is always the safety of technical equipment. So if we speak about safety, we always are asked, what is safety? So if you consider this gas turbine, this is a very powerful gas turbine. It's used for electric power production, several hundred of megawatts, which it can provide. And the question about is, what is happening if such a system runs into a hazard situation, which hazards can occur, and what is in particular the risk that can arise of such a system? For example, if you consider this gas turbine, if it runs into a kind of overspeed, it could happen that it is breaking out of its mountings, that the blades of the system will break out of their mountings, and this comes to the situation that flying parts or flying blades can ensure a lot of people and can produce a lot of damage and a great disaster. So our aim is to prevent if we talk about safety, to prevent from such risks, to prevent from such disasters. And if you look at the next slide, there are several possibilities to do so. If you look at this slide, you see it's with this big arrow in the middle of the picture, you see the increasing risk. And if we talk about this, for example, this gas turbine, talk about equipment under control, where a certain amount of risk is arising. And as you can also see, for example, coming back to this situation with the overspeed of the gas turbine, the risk arising from this system is too high. So as a result of a risk analysis, you identify some measures and methods that you have to, as a result of a risk analysis, you know that you have to reduce this risk to prevent the gas turbine running into overspeed and to reduce this risk to acceptable risk. So the question is, what is acceptable risk? Acceptable risk is a very different term often used. Acceptable means, for example, if we talk about traffic, usually over the world, more than 1 million people will die because of traffic accidents. This seems to be something which is not considered very much by the average peoples. Another point is, on the other side, we have around about 800 to 1,000 injured or dead peoples because of accidents with planes, of crashes of planes. Each time in a plane crashes, a lot of information, a lot of discussion in the news medias, in the medias is done. So this seems to be more or less not acceptable risk. Just to define what is acceptable risk. Acceptable risk is for this defined by law, by governmental regulations, and also by cultural considerations. So what we have to do now, if we talk about safety, we have to reduce this risk, meaning reducing this risk, we have to reduce it to below the acceptable risks. And as you can see, we have here several possibilities to reduce this risk. For example, on the, if you look at the three arrows on the bottom of this picture, you see we have risk, or we have the potential to reduce risk by external risk reduction facilities, meaning this could be also by overdesign or by housing or something like this. Other risk reduction technologies could be by by solid-state systems, also mechanical or hydraulic systems. This is the middle arrow of the three buttons at the bottom of this slide. But, and what is also possible, you can implement, you can create, develop, and implement and dedicated electronic or programmable electronic systems that provides safety functions, that fulfill, that proceed safety functions to bring your equipment under control. And this, coming back to the example from the beginning, to the gas turbine, to bring it in a safe state if a hazard situation occurs. Meaning if the, you have a dedicated system in place, if the gas turbine runs into overspeed, this system will work and provide a safety function, in this case to stop the feeding of the gas to the gas turbine and to bring the gas turbine back into a safe state, meaning it will be shut down or shut off. Okay, so this is what we are talking about, functional safety. Functional safety is, this is what you see in the next slide, is something we are talking about, a combination of probability of occurrence and severity of hazard event. So we discuss about risk that is arising. Then we discuss about electronic systems that are performing safety functions to reduce this risk. So we have to implement hardware and maybe also software to implement this safety functions, in this case coming back to the gas turbine, shutting off the gas feeding and shutting down the gas turbine. And if you talk about related standards for functional safety, the principles behind these related standards are always, we need a robust development process for developing this safety-related systems, meaning we need a development process to avoid introduction of systematic failures during the design and the production of your system. Systematic failures could, for example, be introduced in software. Software always fails systematically because if you have implemented a failure or a fault into your software, it will fail on in a certain time on a certain situation. But on the other hand, you also have to design, and this is the left bubble you see on the slide. You have also to implement a robust design to prevent your system, your safety-related system, from failing because of dangerous failures during the operation, for example, to prevent it from failing because of random hardware errors, and therefore preventing your safety function to operate properly when it is needed. So maybe this is the main principle of safety-related standards: avoidance of systematic failures during design and production, meaning you have to implement a robust development process with related processes, measures, and techniques, and you have to implement a robust design, meaning having a design that can handle, that can avoid, that can control dangerous failure coming up because of random hardware errors. So if we talk about the standards by itself, there are a lot of standards in place. Oh, there's something missing, I think so. There are a lot of standards in place. The base level standard of all functional safety standards we talk about is the IEC 65098. We also talk about a so-called Type A standard. Another base level standard, which is more related to risk analyzing for machineries, is the ISO 12100. So these are the base level standards when we are talking about functions, about safety, about functional safety, about risk reduction. And from this, therefore, they are also named as Type A standard. And from these standards, they are derived very, very much additional standards. Here you see just some examples for them. There are derived more application-specific standards, for example, the ISO 13849, which is related to machinery, as well as the IEC 62061, which is also related to machinery. You can see here two different standardization organizations with similar standards. Or another ISO standard 13850, which is related to functional safety, to functional safety requirements that have to be implemented, for example, in emergency stops. These are the so-called Type B standards because they are addressing a group of technical area, in this case, coming back to the ISO 13849, to machines in general. And then we have, these are the so-called Type C standards, very application-specific standards, for example, here, as you can see, for mechanical presses. There are also some other standards in place, like the IEC 10218, which is related to industrial robots and robot devices, meaning they are very specific to individual applications. All of them are derived from the base level standards 65098 or for more group safety related standards. So if you talk about certification, if you talk about about functional safety standards, they have some commonalities, same principles. So as you can see, this picture is very complicated, but I just want to explain with this picture. You have always to implement a functional safety management, meaning you have to implement all your processes, all your different techniques and measures you're using during the development process of your system. This is shown on this slide on the left side, which is the headline of functional safety management of all steps. And you can see here what you have to provide during this in the terms of functional safety management. You see all the documents, which are in the white boxes you have to provide. You see all the checklists or our documents, which are the blue boxes, we are providing. And you see all the documentation that has to be provided and has to be created during such a functional safety management, such a certification process. In addition, more in the middle of this picture, maybe you look at this box, which has a system design inside and system integration. If you look above this line, you see some additional phases of the certification process. The phases of this certification process of this above of this middle of the line are, we call it the concept phase. So here in this phase, there is a concept prepared. meaning you have a hazard and risk analysis in place, you are deriving from this your safety functions, meaning you are deriving from the safety functions you have to implement a first design of a first architecture of a safety risk, of a safety related system, and you are also starting to derive from this safety architecture your first measures how you make your system as much as possible robust or as much as required robust. On the lower part, on the lower half of the slide, you see all the more detailed points. Then you run into a hardware development process as well as in the software development process, providing additional software, additional documents in this phase. We call this phase the detail phase, providing all the probabilistic or safety value calculations, creating all, doing all the testing, doing all the test planning, and so on for both, for hardware and for software. And later on, if it comes up again into the system integration, to the system integration, you're also integrating hardware and software, doing again the testing, documenting the testing, and documenting all the test results. At the end, if you are doing this process together with us, if everything runs well, if you fulfill all the requirements of the safety-related standards, we will provide you a so-called certificate, which shows that your system is a functional safety-related system with a certain SIL level or performance level, as well as a report on the certificate and as well as a technical report stating all the tests and results we got during the certification process. So what is the advantage of such a certification? Even if you are certifying on the components like a sensor, like a PLC, like a microcontroller, you can use as a system integrator these components, integrate these components into your own system, into your own automation system, into your overall safety-related system for a special application, and do not have to take care or have to consider much about more how to certify such a component because it is already certified. So therefore, you only have to consider your own tasks and have not to struggle around with some internal topics like for a PLC, like for a microcontroller, like for a sensor or whatever it is. So if you combine your system as much as possible with pre-certified or already certified components, it makes your life easier and it reduces your effort during the development process of your safety-related system, just so as hang from my side. Okay, then the next question is, we always ask, what are the differences between the IEC 61508, which is the base level standard, and more application-specific standards, like the ISO 13849. Now, to be honest, there are a lot of, let me say, little details that are the differences between the IEC 61508 and application-specific standards like ISO 13849. This means, as you can see here, a first overview, for example, they have different terms for the risk reduction. IEC 61508 handles with a term which is called SIL. SIL has four levels from 1 to 4. Highest level is SIL 4, which is meaning you have here the highest amount of risk reduction. For example, if we talk about the SIL 3, which is very common used in the industry, we talk about a risk, we talk about probability of dangerous failures of 10 to minus 7 to 10 to minus 8 per hour, which is one dangerous failure between 1,000 and 10,000 years. Then, if you look, for example, to 13849, they discuss about so-called performance levels. This is similar to the SIL level. They defined performance level from A to E, meaning that a SIL performance level of E corresponds to a SIL 3. Performance level of A does not correspond to a SIL. And the difference is that the ISO 13849 is more related to machinery, that it is more dedicated to machinery, that it has more details, as we can see in one of the next two slides, regarding machinery, and that it has also sometimes different terms and ways to do the calculations of the safety values. Safety value in this term is, for example, for IEC 61508, the SIL level. In ISO 13849, is its performance level. We have also safety levels which are called PFH, which is in IEC 61508, the probability of dangerous failure. We have another value in ISO 13849, the MTTFD, which is meaning the mean time to fail, dangerous, which is somewhat calculated different. And we have also to discuss about, for example, values like SFF, the safe failure friction. Maybe someone of you heard about already about this, or also about the diagnostic coverage, which is here called DC. I think a very important difference between the IEC 61528 and the ISO 13849 is a term which is called here HFT and category. This is meaning the system architecture you are dealing with. HFT means hardware fault tolerance. If you have, for example, a hardware fault tolerance of one, then you have you have a system which has one redundancy, meaning one channel of the system can fail and you have a second channel in place which can take over or can still perform your safety function. In ISO 13849, this is called category. And as you can see in the later pictures, this has a big impact on your system. Additional topics that are also addressed are differences between 6528 and also ISO 13849 are, for example, FPGAs, ASIC development, data communication, functional safety management, and so on and so on. Usually we provide trainings for 3 to 4 days to discuss about this with our customers. So if we would, I do not want to talk more about this now because it would be wide beyond the scope of this, far beyond the scope of this today's webinar. Okay, so what are, I think this is one of the most important differences between IEC 61508 and also ISO 13849. If we talk about a safety-rated system, if we talk about a safety-rated system that performs safety functions, we talk always about a combination of sensors, as you can see here, a logic and an actor. For example, sensors can be temperature sensors, can be a brake sensor, can be a steering sensor, can be a pressure sensor. Then you have a logic. This is a kind of control unit, for example, a PLC that also consists out of one or more several microcontrollers or additional CPUs. And then at the end, we have some actors, meaning we have a brake actuator, you have a motor, you have a valve actuator, something like this. For all of these elements, you can see here, you have to calculate all of this safety values, as you can see here in the line below this example. And with the safety values, you can calculate your overall SIL level, your overall probability of dangerous failures of your system. This is, in terms of 6528, done via FMEA, FMEDA, reliability block diagrams, or Markov modeling. So we have here a full probabilistic approach, which provides you a lot of flexibility, a lot of possibilities, but this is also very important, will mean that you have you have to invest a lot of effort to do all of these calculations and to design your system. And this is also the point of view why we see more and more application-specific standards, as the ISO 13849, that try to retrieve or to reduce the complexity, but in this way also the flexibility of 6528, and to define more application-specific details. So, for example, if you look at ISO 13849, they define so-called categories. Maybe you remember this slide we have before the last slide. We discussed about HFT. We discussed about categories. So if you look about 13849, we have so-called designated categories. As you can here see here an example for this. This is a category of 3, which is meaning we have a two-channel system. We have a redundancy of 1. And starting with these categories, they have a simplified approach doing calculations of all of these values, doing safety-related values, doing all of the calculations of mean time to failure, and so on and so on. This means at the end that you have a more easier approach to do your calculation. Your system is more predefined, meaning at the end we do not have a probabilistic approach any longer. So because starting or related to these categories, deterministic approach with clear defined calculations and clear defined values we have to use. What I also want to mention here is that this architecture, as it seems to be more a circuit diagram, not only is considered as a circuit diagram, it can also be seen as logical diagrams for category 3 and 4. This means that not all parts necessarily need to be redundant, but that these are redundant in means of assuring a fault cannot lead to a loss of the safety function. So this is also important. In IEC 6529, you have a lot of vectors or grades of freedom. 13849 says that category 3 and category 4, a single fault is not allowed to lead to the loss of the safety functions. Now, in the past, we did together with TI, we worked on a concept study, how we can, for example, apply this method, how we can apply this concept, for example, to TI microcontrollers, how we can take over. And this is now the situation I want to hand over to my colleague, Christian Herget from TI, because he is informing you about this, how we did this, and what is the solution TI can provide to you, what are the certification solutions TI can provide to you to make your life easier. Thank you.
Thanks, Christian, for this great overview about functional safety and also for guiding to my part of this presentation. Now I will show you how. Now I will show you how TI Hercules MCUs can help you, our customers, with your development for functional safety applications, with an emphasis on ISO 13849 and Category 3. For the sake of completeness, I will do a short repetition about what was said just a few seconds before. So here you can see this designated architecture for Category 3, and usually this involves two MCUs as the two logic blocks, which do some cross-checking, monitoring to each other. We now want to alter this architecture a bit, but let me guide you through this step by step. We also heard about this paragraph from the ISO 13849 standard, which basically says that we are allowed to deviate from these architectures as long as we still fulfill, let's say, the written requirements of our designated category. In the case today, it's category 3 I'm talking about. And for category 3, one main requirement is that we have to be able to control a single fault. That the new block diagram now shows you the architecture TI proposed, which we thought can also fulfill these requirements of category 3. And that was the architecture which was investigated together with TRI in this concept study. It's basically a hybrid between category 2 and a category 3. And in contrast to the original architecture, it's not a physical dual-channel system anymore. It's more a logical dual-channel plus some test equipment, and I will explain you now on the next slides what is really inside of these. That's now a picture of this concept study we did. Again, we did this concept study together with TRI South to really show you, or to give you some evidence that what TI is proposing there is possible and can be realized as such. Okay, same block diagram again, but now let's dig into it a bit more detail. That block diagram, or you will find also that block diagram in this concept study report from TRI, and there are some points, let's say, associated with that we can say right from the beginning. That is that we need multiple logical channels and a high level of diagnostic coverage for this logic block you see in the upper half of this block diagram, which is in that case our Hercules microcontroller. And what was also very clear from the beginning is that we cannot do this concept study just on this block diagram, but we have to really specify a specific use case, which then was examined by TUV South and TI. And that is what we show you on the next slide. Okay, there it is. Okay, that's our specific use case we choose. It's a motor control system. You can see the motor in the lower right. And this motor should be monitored for temperature, so it should be protected to overheat. Therefore, we have these two temperature sensors next to the motor, which are similar to the two sensors which are required by the standard. These are then fed into the microcontrollers, ADCs. We have dual ADCs there, and then the signal is processed in a safe way. I will give you more details in an upcoming slide about this. For now, it's really signals are processed in a safe way, and if the temperature limit is exceeded, a safe talk-off function should be performed, and therefore we have these two relays or redundant relays defined here to de-energize the motor and to prevent it from further heating up. There's also feedback or monitoring path for the upper relay shown here so that we can diagnose if this relay is still functioning. And you can see all these signals are directly connected to the microcontroller. But you might all also have mentioned that there are some lines drawn to this other block in the lower half, which is our TPS 65381 power supply, or it's also so-called companion IC, which acts as the text equipment or watchdog for the microcontroller. So in case the code or the whole microcontroller runs away, this device should be able to catch this and de-energize the motor via these two relays as a second channel shutdown path. There are a few more points. We listed, I think I said before, one major point here is that this microcontroller has to have a very high level of diagnostic coverage, that we need to have the independent monitoring, which in the case of this example is done by this TPS 65381 power supply or companion chip. And that both need to be able to shut down or de-energize the motor in our case. On the next slides, I will give you some more details what makes these two components so special so that these can fulfill the requirements. Okay, that's a block diagram of the safety architecture of the Hercules microcontroller. And okay, let's quickly talk about what makes this so special. The architecture, or we call this architecture the Safe Island architecture, and all parts which are in the Safe Island are now highlighted. The Safe Island is mainly around the CPU, the flash, the RAM, so the memories, and these major components of a microcontroller now have very high quality diagnostics built in hardware to be able to monitor if, for example, the CPU is still functioning correctly. For this, we have the so-called lockstep CPUs. We have two physically two CPUs which monitor each other. And that's really the key here, that we have these high quality diagnostics in hardware which are running constantly in background. That's also so-called online monitoring. The idea is that we now have defined a group or a platform within the microcontroller where you can trust that it works. And now you can use this platform to diagnose other components within the microcontroller, which leads us to the next slide. The so-called blended hardware diagnostics. These are the blue parts. These are mainly all peripherals, and these peripherals have some safety features integrated. They have some built-in checks, diagnostics, but they all need also some level of software to perform the checks if you're using them in a safety application. Whereas really the red blocks require only a very little amount of software to work. It's mainly configuring them, and then they work in the background. Then there is a third group. These are the non-safety critical functions, and these are all debug interfaces, so JTAG, calibration interface, trace interface. And these are considered as not safety critical, as they are not used in the actual or final application. They're just used in the development phase. So there are no additional diagnostics on these. Here it's just important that they can be shut down. Again, let me please summarize this. So we have this microcontroller with this safe island approach, where the critical region of the microcontroller is heavily protected by hardware diagnostics. That's, again, the safe island. And now we can use this safe island to detect failures in the remaining device in a very cost-efficient way, cost-efficient because we have a lot of hardware assistance, so we don't need a lot of software to implement diagnostic checks for our peripherals, and also not only within the microcontroller, but also often on the system level. For example, there are loopback, the hooks for loopback functionality, which can be used and also to perform some diagnostics on a system level. One important point I want to mention here is that all diagnostics include mechanisms to test for latent faults in these checkers. So these are, let's say, hidden faults which don't affect the normal functionality of your device, but in case maybe a failure is in a peripheral and there is such a latent fault, this might not be detected, and therefore we have diagnostics included to be able to test these diagnostics and to make sure that these are working. The other component I mentioned is the TPS65381 companion or chip or PMIC power management IC. This device is mainly used as a multi-rail power supply, supplying the microcontroller, but not only the microcontroller, it can for sure also supply some other components on the board, like a CAN transceiver or some sensors, which are there. But today I want to focus on the safety features and pick out a few major ones. That's the question and answer watchdog, which is connected to the microcontroller with an SPI interface. So this provides second, or this monitoring for the CPU, if it's still working correctly, if this timing is still correct, and in a, let's say, in a more or a more advanced way than a simple window watchdog, as really the CPU has to perform some calculations to give the right answer back to the watchdog. Then we have a special module there, which is called MCU Error Signal Monitor, which can monitor if our Hercules microcontroller has detected a fault, and if so, it can react independently of the software on such a fault, for example, shut down the system. And also it has a reset circuitry implemented to be able to put the microcontroller in a reset state, again, if anything fails, for example, if the voltage rates are out of range, then can put the microcontroller in a reset state to have it in a known good state. Okay, please let me give you another example here. So here I want to compare the traditional physical dual channel approach versus our lockstep or logical dual channel approach. By taking the example of an I/O controller or PLC I/O module. On the upper half of this slide, you can see the traditional physical dual-channel system with the two microcontrollers, and there are a lot of connections between the two microcontrollers for cross-checking, synchronizing the two. One microcontroller is processing inputs of one sensor, the other of the second sensor. Both are able to, to switch our relays or to de-energize the motor in the example I had brought before. And there are some pros with such a system. Mainly it's really the traditional approach, it's well understood. Component level diversity is possible, so you could choose two different MCUs, which gives you a good diversity there. But this is not really always implemented. Often two same or similar microcontrollers are used for this. There are some cons which come with this. Mainly it's, for example, the cross-monitoring between the two MCUs require a lot of software and introduces some latency. The memory is usually mirrored, so both hold the same, let's say, application image. This can be very expensive. Software is needed for syncing, for the safety checks, for self-tests, so these have to be developed, and usually more physical components are needed on the board level, which means cost, board space, increases the complexity of a board. Whereas in the lower half, we have our approach, this logical dual channel with our LogicStep CPU or Hercules microcontroller, and here we have some pros. We have very fast fault detection because of our hardware implemented diagnostics. These are very fast compared to software diagnostics. We are able to detect a lot of hard and transient faults. And we can clearly say the amount of faults or the probability that we detect them. Our memory is protected by ECC. That means that we don't need to mirror the whole application. So that's way more economic to have this ECC than to mirror the memory. The self-tests in hardware makes it very fast and predictable on the execution time and also on how they react. We have the possibility for some module level diversity inside the microcontroller. For example, we have diverse modules to provide the GPIO functionality. And one major drawback, which we won't want to hide, is that this is not the traditional approach, but therefore we really performed this concept study together with DOE to show you, okay, even if it's not traditional, it's also possible to realize a system in such a way. Okay, let me quickly go to the, some softer topics, like the documentation we provide and also the software deliverables we provide. So what is required in terms of documentation from the standard? I'm referring now to IEC 61508, as this standard has the most requirements on the component level. It mainly requires a safety manual for so-called compliant items, which is required to enable you to, integrate a compliant item. And it shows the compliance of this of our item with the requirements of the standard. VTI provides a safety manual, and that safety manual for the device, we mainly describe how to use the product with respect to the safety architecture. It gives you details about the safety architecture, lists all the integrated and some external diagnostics, and describes them also in detail, what they are, what they do. Then we provide two more documents, the so-called safety analysis reports, which are basically extracts of the FMEDA we did for our device. And these mainly list the metrics of our devices, like fit rate, diagnostic coverage, safe failure fraction at a device, but also on a down to a module level. Now let's have a closer look into what these are. This is an example what's written in the safety analysis report. By the way, this data is only available under NDA, therefore I had to erase this here. And it really gives you at the end a table showing the metrics for the device I mentioned before, so fit rate, safe failure fraction. And it also lists all the assumptions of use we made to get to these values. So now you can question yourself, these assumptions TI made, are they also appropriate for my applications? And I can tell you in most cases they are not. And therefore we have the second safety analysis report, that's the so-called detailed safety analysis report, and that's not really a static report, but it is a tool which allows you to specify your use case. By use case, I mean how you use in which environment, for example, you use the microcontroller, like the temperature profile or the amount of memory of the device you're using. You might not use the whole memory, but only a subset. And therefore, you can get, let's say, better numbers at the end if you're able to rate or to specify this. You can also choose the modules of the device you're going to use. For example, if you don't use all CAN modules, you can specify this in this tool. And also specify the diagnostics as they are described in the safety manual you are going to use, and you really get tailored data for this application. That's a very quick overview about our portfolio. It shows you that we have a wide range of microcontrollers, ranging from smaller ones to very large ones. Main thing here is that these devices are pin-to-pin compatible and software compatible. So if you're developing with these and you see that you need more performance, you can easily swap to another device with more performance, more memory, etc. Let me quickly explain the color coding here. So the gray boxes or devices are already certified by TUV South, so we did a pre-certification for these devices, and for the blue ones, the certification is in progress. So I have to speed up a bit. So what else does TUI provide? So that's now mainly about software we provide. Here you can see the software blocks we provide, and let me highlight the ones which are, I think, important for today. This is in the lower column, the Safety Eye Diagnostic Library, which helps you to access the safety features of the device, to configure them, And we have the so-called Halcogen tool, hardware abstraction code generator, which is basically the hardware abstraction layer gives you. For these two components, we have introduced so-called compliance support packages, which helps you in your development with certifying you and our code later on. That's illustrated by this slide. So it shows you the V model from the IEC 658 standard and all the different steps and tasks which have to be performed. And there are now work products associated to each of these steps. And TI already provides many of these works products for these components to really help you to ease your development and to help you with the time to market. This slide gives you the details about the CSP, and again, for the sake of time, I want to skip this. Please feel free to ask us questions. Also, I think we are able to answer other questions later on. Similar, I want to skip this slide. It's just, it's showing you that we have a special certifiable compiler available. I think for now that's good. Okay, with that, Brandon, I would say let's get to the Q&A.
All right, thanks, Christian. That was some good stuff from both Christians here, actually. And as mentioned, this takes us into the Q&A portion of the event. So keep your questions coming, audience, and we'll get to as many of them as we can in the time we have remaining. So here's a question first for Christian Dermeyer of TÜV Rail. Is PLD strongly equivalent to SIL2 and PLE to SIL3?
Okay, well, PLD and PLE are corresponding to SIL2 and SIL3. This means they are meaning the same amount of risk reduction from a technical system arises, but in case of PLD and PLE from a certain machine or something like this, so there are calls corresponding to them. If you are only evaluating for PLD or PLE, meaning for ISO 13849, the approach and the details are somewhat slightly different as to the approach and effort you have to implement for SIL2 or SIL3 related to IEC 658. This means you have a somewhat different approach to calculate the safety values. It is it's somewhat simplified in 13849 for you. On the other side, we have also, this is, for example, something special, the requirement in ISO 13849 that a single fault is not allowed to lead to the loss of the safety function if you have a performance level of E, for example. So this means at the end there are some differences which can at the end lead to the situation that you have to adopt if you want to have evaluated a system for both standards, the system slightly. But at the end, if you are starting with, for example, 6.15.8 and then also do the evaluation for 13.8.9, at the end 80 to 85% are the same or are similar, so meaning if you start with one standard and then evaluate for the others, you will fulfill already 80 to 80, maybe also to 90% of the other standard.
Great. All right. Now one for Christian Herget of TI. For the diagram that was referring to the lockstep controller approach, can you describe how two faults are handled in the CPU to meet a standard such as EN 298?
To be honest, we cannot handle two faults here. And for the ISO 13849 CAT3 example, it was really only required to handle one fault. So two faults usually means that we have a fault, let's say, in the diagnostic and in the CPU itself, And that's what was referred to as a latent fault. So we do have ways to test if the diagnostic works, but if both occur at the same time, then we cannot handle this. And I'm not familiar with this standard, so I'm not sure what is really required here.
Great. All right. Well, how about this one? Does TI provide a soft error rate for the Hercules MCU? And if so, how is that computed?
Also, a very good question. And I guess it has a long answer, but for now I want to say yes, we provide this detail. And there are standards out there which allows us to calculate the error rate. And we also did some tests to get to this data.
Excellent. Now on back to Christian Dermeyer from TÜV. Has TÜV evaluated the Hercules architecture for SIL 3 per IEC 61508, and what was the result?
Yes, we did it. This was also part of our certification we did together with you. And the evaluation, or the result of the evaluation, is that you can use the Hercules architecture in safety-related system up to SIL 3. This means it contributes to your functionality if you build up a SIL 3 overall system.
Excellent. Now back to Christian Herget at TI. How can you use external memory for safety as the internal memory is somewhat small?
Yeah, that's a question we hear very often. Many of the microcontrollers do feature a so-called EMIF interface, external memory interface, but we don't have any diagnostic for the external interface in hardware. So we purely rely on software here, and that's also mentioned in the safety manual of our device that, for example, you have to add a checksum, or you have to really mirror your data in the external memory. So nothing which can be solved by Hercules in hardware.
Great, thanks. So back to Christian Dermeyer. How long does the certification for safety-related systems take, and what's a typical project duration?
Well, this typically depends on the customer, on the company who wants to do the certification. As you maybe can remember to the slide about the certification process, you have to develop a lot of documentation, a lot of calculation, and so on. And this is the amount of effort that leads at the end, the duration of such a project. So typically, such a project has a duration of 1 year, but this means if you are coming very early to us or to the certifier, to the certification body, for example, in your concept phase, so meaning you have your first system design, your first system architecture, some FMEA calculations, some safety plan, then the certification body, or we can accompany you during all your development, having also meeting together, introducing our comments to what you are trying to develop. And this means at the end of your develop, it's just a couple of some weeks to prepare or to finalize the certificate if everything went well, and the report on the certification and the technical report. But typically from our experience, we discuss about 1 year, including also your own development.
Great. All right, time for about one more question here, and I'll pose this to Mr. Herget of TI. How can you get access to the FMEDA data if it's under NDA?
So we have an easy-to-use process for this in place on our webpage under ti.com/safety. You can find a link to these safety reports, which will actually lead you to a form where you can apply for this NDA. You will then get automatically sent this NDA form. You have to fill it out, sign it from your side, send it back to us, and we grant you access to a special community where you can download these documents and also ask questions about the content of these details. Yeah.
Very good. All right. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of our time today, and there were several questions that we weren't able to get to, but not to worry. We'll have the appropriate representatives follow up with you. I'd like to thank our speakers today, Christian Herget and Christian Dermeyer, for functional safety tips there. And we at Open Systems Media, Texas Instruments, and TUV SUDRAIL Munich would also like to thank you, the audience, for attending today and contributing some excellent questions. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast will be made available there as well. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media's eCasts available for download there as MP3s. Thanks again for attending, and have a great day.